Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and on today's program, I get to chat with four different sets of quilters and a quilt shop owner. So that makes five people. It's going to be a whole lot of fun. First up, I have Jennifer Heinen, who is the person behind Jennifer Jangles. And if you have some In the Beginning fabric on your shelf, you might just have some of her really, really delightful and whimsical drawings there. I just love her fabric. It is so fresh and exciting and fun, totally fun. So Jennifer's going to be here and tell me a little bit about how she designs and what's up with her. So let's get to it. Hi, Jennifer. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Pat. Thanks for having me.
You know, I was reading your about page on your website, which is jangles.net, and it talked about your first craft as being a Valentine for your dad.
Yes. I don't remember a whole lot about it because I was 2 years old, but my mom brings it up all the time and tells me about how, you know, that was the first thing I ever made, and she still got it, and,
and that's
my
funny.
First official craft.
Yeah, and so she still has it, huh? She's kept it.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
That's so sweet. I think it's even more incredible that your family, you know, held on to it. It was, were you the oldest child?
I was, yes.
Yeah.
So, you know, they kept everything of mine.
They kept everything, right. Yeah, I was the oldest child, too. Yeah, there's a lot more of my stuff. So when did you start to sew?
Oh, gosh. I think I was between 4 and 5 years old. I was really young, and I got a Sew Perfect sewing machine, one of the little toy sewing machines. That it had, you know, the real thread and needle, though, so you could actually sew things. And I got that and just, you know, took off. My grandma had given me some old fabric swatches that she had had, and I just started sewing placemats and bags and whatever else I could come up with.
So you got the bug really young.
Yeah, that's all I did as a child was make things. I was either sewing, painting, crafting, doing something, you know, with my hands. So it was just,
You actually went to study for ceramics. Is that right?
Yes. Yes. I always wanted to be a fashion designer, and I sewed all through elementary school and high school, worked at a fabric store. And then, I was taking 3 art classes at my high school, and the only one left that I could add to my schedule was ceramics. And I tried it, I loved it, and I was hooked. So that was right before college, so I went to school to get my ceramics degree.
Wow, and so what do you do with a ceramics degree when you're out?
Good question.
Just curious.
Not a whole lot, right? If you get your master's, you can be a professor, but I didn't really want to teach. I wanted to make things, and, I figured I'd strike out on my own doing something.
Right. So you actually started your own business is what you did. You started creating your own work and selling your ceramics and, that style that, you know, you can see Jennifer's work on her site, jangles.net, but that style you've translated into fabric. When did that happen?
That was, probably about 5 years ago. I always wanted to go back to school and get my textiles degree. And I always said I would do that when I was 35, and I turned 35 and realized that there was no way I was going back to college, but it wasn't for me. So I thought, well, I'll just try, you know, on my own, learn as much as I possibly can about designing fabric and, go from there. So it was natural for me to start painting on tiles, ceramic tiles, firing them and then using those in my designs on my fabric, because that's kind of what I knew how to do. So
right. And it's a really, when you design fabric, you're designing small things, which then get repeated for the whole length
right.
of the fabric. So,
yeah.
Your images, which were your ceramics, they seem to translate so well. And then you added to it, of course, for the fabrics.
Yes. Yep. You're right. And it was a lot of late nights working hard over and over coming up with patterns, but, I got it to work.
That's right. That's right. So tell me a little bit about your process for designing a fabric line. How does that start?
Well, I usually have some kind of idea from Jason Yinter from In the Beginning Fabrics. We work closely together mm-hmm. on, ideas for themes or, if it's going to be a holiday line or something like that. And then I just start sketching and painting and drawing away. And I'm kind of a fast designer, like fast worker. That's, I think, how I keep my paintings and drawings loose. But uh-huh. I do so many of them and edited out, so many drawings before I come up with, what I want for the line.
Right. I can imagine you have to do a lot of different colorways and maybe you have pieces. Do you ever find, how many lines have you done? You've done six more?
I just wrapped up my ninth line.
Wow.
And a few weeks ago. So, yeah.
So sometimes you find, something you drew in the beginning, Jennifer, sort of comes back later in one of the lines at work so you can tweak it?
Oh, yes, definitely. I have a big set of map drawers that have tons and tons of tiles and paintings, and I paint on little tiny, either canvas or cards or tiles, so it's lots of little bits and pieces, and I keep everything because, I do edit it out, but then I'll bring it back and repaint mm-hmm. it or change the color, and then sometimes it works in the next line. So I'm always going back to see what I was thinking a few years ago. Mm-hmm.
So what do you feel like is sort of ties together? What is your sort of running theme between all of the art that you do, between the ceramics and the fabric and the even the patterns? Is it like your color? Is it design?
It's all very happy and fun, and it's definitely the colors. That is my favorite part of creating anything, whether it's my beads and buttons or my fabric. It's, coming up with color combinations that work well together and are fun.
Go ahead. Yeah, so when your colors are pretty saturated, I would say, in your fabric. And,
yeah.
The ceramics, I think the same colors are there, aren't they? They just don't, because of the firing and everything, they're just a different shade.
Right, yeah. It just comes out, different mediums, and it comes out different colors. But mm-hmm. they're similar. And we also, when I designed the buttons originally to go with the fabrics, we kind of did on purpose. We made the fabrics a little bit darker than the buttons, so then that way when you sew a button on, you see it instead of it blending in and matching the fabric exactly.
Oh, well, that's smart. Yeah. Smart girl. Now, you and I were talking a little bit, and you told me that you really right now are very into the Japanese style of design and the Zaka. Is that how you pronounce
uh-huh.
it? Yeah.
I think it's Zaka, yeah.
Yeah, tell me a little bit about that.
Well, all of the Japanese crafts, the sewing and printmaking and things, everything is super tiny, super small, and just really embellished and happy. And, it's kind of a way of life, I guess, is where everything you use, even in everyday life, is, fun and makes you smile when you use it. So I've always felt that way with my jewelry and my pottery. Like, if you're going to drink out of a coffee mug, it might as well be, super fancy and pretty and, make you smile when you use it because you're mm-hmm. using it every day. So the same thing with sewing little bags or pillows or pincushions or anything like that. It's just a lot of fun to embellish them with buttons and trims and beads and all sorts of stuff.
Do you have any tips for, like, is, you know, when you use your buttons and stuff, since they're ceramic, is there something special that needs to be done with them, or are they pretty, you know, pretty durable?
They're pretty durable because I make them by hand. I smooth all the edges so there aren't any sharp edges that can bang into things. But I did hear a very interesting tip, and I've never tried this because I turn my garments or things inside out and wash them in the machine, but you can wrap aluminum foil around like a fragile button and wash it in the washing machine, and that just kind of protect makes a cushion around it and protects
Oh.
it when it hits the walls and things to make it stay together and not break.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, something to try.
Definitely.
So you also have patterns. A lot of your patterns are smaller project things, pin cushions and you know, little dolls. They're so cute. I love the elephant. Oh my gosh, Pickles the elephant. How adorable. That's a So are you when you design a line of fabric, do you usually put out a pattern or two to go with it?
Yes, that's
Okay.
usually lately I've been designing so many different lines of fabric that I haven't had time to put out as many patterns, but that's usually my goal is a couple patterns per line, so.
So when you go to a quilt show, you know, so we'll talk quilts here. Like, what attracts you right away when you go in there? I mean, what kind of quilts are you attracted to?
Well, I'm always attracted to the really the intricate stitching and embellishing that are on quilts. It's not necessarily how I sew quilts, but
Right.
it's what I'm drawn to, and I love to look at those kinds of quilts.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. I've talked to a few people recently that say the same thing, that that's not the style that they make, but that's what they want to go look at when they go to the show. Yeah, just like something different than what they make themselves. And I what you also blog, so is
I
they can get
do.
people can get to that from your website.
Yes, there is a link on the website, and it's Jennifer Jangles. If you look up Jennifer Jangles' blog, it'll come up. And I've got
Okay.
lots of projects, free projects, and patterns on there for folks.
Ah, excellent, excellent. And you also have all your tab, like with all your fabric lines, so people can check it out.
Yes.
Wonderful. Jennifer, this has been so exciting to have you on the show. Thanks for sharing.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me. It was great.
So everybody should go visit Jennifer Heinen at Jennifer Jangles. Blogspot.com or at her website, jangles.net. This is American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. We'll be right back after the break.
Ready for a new project? Choose from hundreds of free patterns in the Projects and Ideas section of our website, allpeoplequilt.com.
The Fall 2012 Moda Fabrics Fashion Show is about to start. First up, the exotic fabrics of Cusco by Kate Spain and Chant, with rich fuchsia, indigo, and orchid. Do you hear that? It's the ocean breezes coming from the Seascapes collection by Deb Strain. It's no mystery, you'll love the Get a Clue with Nancy Drew line. Hearts and flowers and houndstooth, oh my! Kissing Booth by Basic Gray brings romance to the runway. Stay tuned for more runway reporting. Visit your local quilt shop to see these fashionable lines and more from Moda Fabrics.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Keltner, executive editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making a pillowcase and making a difference. It's easy. Make and donate pillowcases in your local community. Use your favorite pattern or choose from one of the free patterns at allpeoplequilt.com. Whether you sew pillowcases with a group or by yourself, you can help someone less fortunate. You could donate them to a women's shelter, boys or girls club, homeless shelter, veterans home, or any other organization you know of in need. Once you donate the pillowcases, log on to allpeoplequilt.com. Click on the box in the upper right-hand corner for the 1 million pillowcase challenge and enter the number of pillowcases you created to our national tally. We know quilting changes everything, and we're out to show the world just how much quilters care. please join the American Patchwork and Quilting 1 Million Pillowcase Challenge. We're counting on you.
Welcome to the Spring 2012 Moda Fabrics Fashion Show. We've got a great lineup for you today. Entering with the Spin Twirl by Me and My Sister Designs brings a playful and fun vibe to the runway. Oh, Hello Luscious by Basic Gray. You looking good, girl. Up next, Reunion by Sweetwater offers a fresh take on navy by pairing it with gray and happy shades of green, yellow, and red. Look who's coming now. It's the Berenstain Bears, a childhood favorite. Stay tuned for more runway reporting and visit your local quilt shop to see these fashionable lines and more from Moda Fabrics.
Get quilting tips and instructions for web-exclusive projects free every week, delivered to your inbox. Sign up today for your free weekly e-newsletter at allpeoplequilt.com.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. I have Marie Boswick, who's a novelist that writes great stories that always have, not all of them, but a lot of them have a quilting theme to them. And Marie's been on the show before to talk to us about her cobblestone series. It was just amazing. Well, she has a new book out, and the book's called Between Heaven and Texas. And this also has a quilt story woven all through it. This book just sort of notches up so many levels. It's an amazing, amazing read. Marie and I were chatting, and she told me that this book has a major inspiration, and that is Joyce Ely and her daughter, Sarah Ely. And I thought it would be super fabulous to have shop owner Joyce come on and talk to us a little bit about, the two of them, about how this happened, the story behind the book. So welcome to the show, Marie and Joyce.
Hi, how are you doing, Pat?
Hello.
So, Marie, why don't you first tell me, how it is that the book, like, how did you and Joyce meet? Was it before the book? You know, what happened?
Yes, it was before this book. We connected for the first time because Joyce wrote me a letter. And I get a lot of mail, and I read every single piece of it. But I will tell you, the letter that Joyce sent me just knocked my socks off. It brought tears to my eyes, and it really made me know that I needed to write more about Mary Dell Templeton, although that time I wasn't sure how I was going to do it. Mm-hmm. And maybe, I don't know, Joyce can probably tell you more about what she wrote.
Yeah, Joyce, why did you feel compelled to sort of reach out to Marie and share something so personal? Because tell us what it was.
Well, sure. I had actually already accepted a proposal to take over a piece of, the first floor of a building that my husband and I owned a business on the second floor to open a quilt shop. My daughter, Sarah, who has Down syndrome, was about ready to age out of the school system, and the opportunities for her were not exactly what we had in mind. And so I agreed to take the space. I had absolutely no idea what I was doing. I had no business plan. I had no money. I had, nothing but an idea planted in my head. And I was meeting with a lot of people who were pretty negative about the idea. And I myself was starting to question, why am I doing this? You know, what am I doing? And all of a sudden, I was walking through a bookstore for a completely unrelated reason, and on a table in the middle of the aisle of a Barnes & Noble, while Sarah was at music therapy, I spotted this book that had a symbol on the cover. And I picked it up, and I glanced at it. I looked at the author, and I had never heard of this author before. Sorry, Marie. And I really bought it sight unseen. I love to keep a book in the car. I'm a fluent reader, and the fact that it had a symbol certainly caught my eye. And the next day, my son had an orthodontist appointment, and while I was sitting there waiting for him, I started reading this book, having no idea what it was about. And I got to this paragraph that talked about this character in the book that was a gentleman, Howard, who was 24 years old and had Down syndrome. And the way that Marie described this character absolutely brought me to tears sitting in this orthodontist's office. And it was just so inspiring to me because she has this character so well defined and just described him with absolutely beautiful words. And one of the sentences that I'll never forget, and I've quoted it many times, is she talks about that this mother and son, just that they make an unusual and an unbeatable team. And it was at that moment that I was like, you know what? I'm on the right path, and I need to keep that vision, and I need to get the negative influences out of my life, and I need to just focus on where Sarah and I need to be. And we opened a shop on Sarah's 21st birthday, really because of the inspiration that Marie provided in this first book that I read.
Ah, that's just like, oh, and your shop is called J. Ellen's House of Fabric in Lyndhurst, Ohio. So, Marie, when you got this note and you were had this character from your first series, what started going through your head for a process of what you were going to do?
Well, I will tell you, I didn't know at first, but here's what I did know. You know, it's funny, Joyce, you memorized a sentence from my book. I memorized a sentence from the letter you sent me. And what she said in the letter was, thank you, thank you, thank you. Nobody ever writes about our kids as having anything to offer. And I thought, well, that is wrong. And I want to change that because I believe with all my heart and soul that absolutely everybody is on this earth for a reason and everybody has something to offer. And I thought this could be a chance for Mary Dell and Howard, and Mary Dell is Howard's mother, to be such an encouragement to people with Down syndrome and parents and family members of people with Down syndrome. So I didn't know what I was going to do then, but I knew I had to write more about Mary Dell and Howard. And to do that, I knew I probably had to give them their own book.
Ah,
and that's what I've done.
That's what you've done, and you based it in Texas.
Yes, I did, yes.
And why was that?
Well, Mary Dell is a true blue Texan. Now, she appears in the Cobble Court novels a number of times. She's Evelyn's best friend, and she's very inspirational and instrumental, and she is a powerhouse. This woman, she's been one of my favorite characters from the very first. She just barreled into these books. But being a true blue Texan, you know, she's not going to, even though she loves Evelyn, she's not going to show up in Connecticut very long because there's just not enough Dr. Pepper in Connecticut to keep her supplied for any amount of time. So to really understand Mary Dell, you've got to see her on her own turf. And, you know, I've lived in Texas four times, in my life. And I have a kind of a soft spot in my heart for Texans because the thing about Texans is they're just so darn pleased to be Texans, and I find that very attractive. It's a confidence that they have that that I like.
Mm-hmm. So that sort of carries now. You've given them their whole story to share. Does it have a quilt theme, heavy quilt theme in the new book?
There is, you know, in all of my books, somebody once asked me in an interview, it's like, well, how can you write novels about quilting? And I said, well, because I don't write novels about quilting. I write novels about characters. I write novels about relationships. Now, my characters are drawn together very often through quilting. And indeed, Mary Dell is certainly one of those people because Mary Dell is a fabulous quilter. She's just so, so talented technically, but of course she has one problem. She has no taste whatsoever. None. Just the worst color sense in the world. And this is where Howard comes in. Although now I'm writing about the early days, but as Howard grows up, Howard has amazing color sense. And so together with Howard with his color sense and Mary Dell with her technical skills, they are the complete package. They are two sides of the same coin, and they really fulfill each other in a beautiful way.
So, you know, Joyce, what did you think when you read the story? I'm sure you've read the story. The book is out soon, right, Marie?
April 30th.
April 30th. Okay. So, Joyce, what did you think when you read it?
Well, oddly enough, the character and Marie, of course, at the time had never met us, so it's only serendipitous that this happened, but the age that Howard is in the book that I read, and Marie taking him back in time to his birth, he is born just 2 years before Sarah was technically born, and Sarah was born in 1989, And as I was reading the draft of Marie's book, I'm telling you, I sat there with Kleenex in my hand the entire time, because when you give birth to a child with Down syndrome, it's shocking. A lot of parents do not know that the child that they're going to have is going to be Down syndrome. When the doctor tells you that, it's shocking. And so when you go back and you hear a story or you read a story, it brings up all those emotions that you experienced, you know, and for me that was 22 plus years ago. But it was just such a beautiful read. And what I really loved about what Marie did with the character Mary Dell is she gave her an inner strength that, we all find eventually, some moms find it sooner than others, but she just used such beautiful words to describe very early on how Mary Dell stands up for Howard, and you just know at that moment in time that she's going to be okay and that Howard is truly going to bless her life.
It just gives me like chills. It's like such an amazing story. Sarah actually has a true love of fabric, right? Your daughter, Sarah.
Well, that's partly how the store came about. Shortly after I agreed to take on this space that at the time was a wedding store, a very interesting thing happened, and Sarah showed some interest in some fabric that I had on my sewing counter, and up until that point in time, she had never showed any interest in what I was doing in my sewing room. And that spurred the idea for me that, you know what, I bet I could teach Sarah to sew. And so I thought of something that day that would be very simple for her to do, and that would be a pillowcase. And so while she was at her job training program that day, I Googled pillowcases, and up came the 1 million pillowcase challenge. And I had never heard about it before, but as I read it, I just absolutely loved the concept. And so when Sarah came home that day, I asked her if she'd like to make a pillowcase and told her that we would be giving it to somebody that was in the hospital, possibly with cancer. And she immediately thought of her friend Kristen Curtin, who was currently in the hospital at that time waiting for a bone marrow transplant. And so Sarah made 2 pillowcases for Kristen, and we mailed them. We blogged about it. Kristen's mom blogged about it, and that just absolutely launched such a wonderful, wonderful program that we have been doing with the 1 Million Pillowcase Challenge. And as of this weekend, we donated another 100, so we are up to 1,218 pillowcases that we have donated.
Wow. Oh,
and literally
goodness.
Just 5 minutes before we started this interview, I had a customer who has been handing out a lot of the pillowcases to the patients at the Seidman Cancer Center. And she was just there yesterday, and she told me a story about a woman that was just so thrilled to have this pillowcase, and she just kept saying, it really is for free? It really is for free.
Oh.
And our customer said, yes, it's a gift from Sarah, and there's a little card in there that tells about the story.
Mm-hmm.
And she said this woman just had absolute tears in her eyes as she was reading it, and that's why we do it.
Ah. You know what? This has just been so wonderful to have you both come on and share like how this whole story happened. Joyce, you know, your story is incredible. People can actually read more about you and Sarah at your site, right? JLN'sHouseOfFabric.com, where you have different places, and they can visit you and visit Sarah. And Marie, I just am thrilled about your new book.
I am more excited about this than I have been, and I love them all, but this book really has a special place in my heart.
Yeah, you know, I think you are just going to be, out there, and people are going to be so excited to read it. So the book is called Between Heaven and Texas. They can go and pre-order. They can go to your website, mariebostwick.com, and thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, Pat.
Thanks, Pat. Thanks, Marie.
Good to talk to you.
This is American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. We're going to take a break, and then we'll be right back.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to the Fall 2012 Moda Fabrics Fashion Show. These collections are hot, hot, hot. Fig Tree is back with a new collection called Tapestry, which weaves together Greek and Moroccan influences for a beautiful result. We're mad for the plaids in the We Wovens Brights collection. Next, pull up an Adirondack chair and enjoy the ocean view by Paul Brent. And finally, Three Sisters delivers a delicious helping of double chocolat with scrumptious colors of dark chocolate, cherry, caramel, and vanilla bean. Stay tuned for more runway reporting. Visit your local quilt shop to see these fashionable lines and more from Moda Fabrics.
Make the most of your sewing machine by watching Machine Minute videos brought to you by Baby Lock. Learn about popular topics like tension troubles, stitch length, needles, buttonholes, zipper basics, and more. Watch these videos at allpeoplequilt.com/videos.
To find a quilt shop near you that carries the latest issues of Quilt Sampler and Quilts & More magazines, go to allpeoplequilt.com and click on Find a Shop.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. I'm very excited to be able to have Lyric Kennard on the show. She is an author and an artist, and I just love her creative spirit. I love her work. I'm just really excited to have her come on and share with all of us about creativity and actually about making mistakes. That really sounds funny, but she's sort of an expert at helping us work through all of that. So, Lyric, thanks for being on.
It's a pleasure to be here with you and your listeners.
You know, Lyric, how did you get started working with fabric?
I can't remember a time that I haven't worked with fabric. My mom sewed and my grandma quilted. She lived with us. And from quite a young age, I started sewing and making clothes.
So you just had that bug right from the beginning.
I did. I didn't start quilting, however, until I was grown up and out of the house and had my first child and kind of needed to get out of the house and talk to grown-ups. And a good friend saw me going crazy and said, come to quilt bee with me. And I said, yes, I would love to.
That's funny. You know, a lot of people make their first quilt for babies.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So did you have quilters in your family, or were you mostly sewing clothing and home deck kind of stuff?
I was mostly sewing clothing back when it used to be cheaper to do that, and they didn't have, you know, all the wonderful different sizings that they had that they have now in the stores. It used to be that was my only option if I wanted clothes that fit and that I could afford.
Right.
My grandma quilted, but it wasn't quilts like we see nowadays. You know, she just used whatever, you know, double knit scraps were on hand, and she made some very interesting things. We all fight over her quilts. All of us siblings love and adore her quilts, but none of us would call them really beautiful. They were very much wonderful and full of her personality.
Yeah, utility quilts, I think, you know, that's sort of made to be used, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So when you first started quilting, I bet your work doesn't look like it does now.
It does not. I started out, although I learned from the beginning. I learned traditional quilting. My very first quilt was made out of old jeans, and it was a log cabin. And that was quite an adventure. It was before I knew anything about what I was doing,
right
before I joined the Quilt Bee. So I thought, oh, great picnic quilt. And I don't know what I was thinking. I put twill on the back and two layers of batting, and I bought new denim to put as the center of each quilt because it was beautiful and red, and didn't even think about the different rates of shrinkage, and must have broken 5,000 needles as I quilted the thing. But boy, it was a favorite in the trunk of our car for years.
It would probably outlive every other quilt.
Yeah, it's still floating out there somewhere. We lost it at a picnic one year.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh. So one of the things that you and I talked about, Lyric, was that you're really a firm believer that anybody can be an artist. So somewhere along the way, your picnic blanket quilt, you changed your style and became a different kind of quilter. What is that sort of process?
For me, it was an awakening. My father's an artist. My mother was a potter and a weaver, and my siblings all took art lessons, but I couldn't deal with that when I was growing up because my dad would look at things and tell you how to fix them. when you draw, instead of just saying, oh, that's beautiful, you know, because he's a teacher, you know, so I couldn't take that. I did other things. But after I moved out, had that urge for creativity. I really wanted to try art and tried all different things, but none of them really worked with the babies in the house, the paint dries and the brush kind of thing. And I went to my first big quilt show about a year after I had learned to quilt and stood in front of a Carol Breyer Fowler quilt and just had an epiphany and went, oh, I didn't know quilts could do that, because I had kind of dropped all the art things to take care of the babies. But quilting you can do, you can take a stitch, drop it, leave it, go take care of the babies, come back, and it's right like you left it.
Right.
So, you know, I immediately took a left turn and took all the classes I could from art quilters, and the rest is history. It's just a perfect merging of the urge to create new and original things with the wonderful medium of cloth and the structure of quilts.
So when people are learning, I think this is where the mistake stuff comes in. We have to make mistakes when we're learning, right?
Absolutely. In fact, I think even any master of their technique, any artist, if they're not making mistakes all the time, they're really boring. They're never trying anything new. They're never getting outside of their comfort zone. So I think making mistakes and failure is vital to growth and vital to creativity.
So how, when you're teaching, because you teach a lot, you travel and you teach, how do you break people out? Do you get a lot of students who are, you know, want to make it perfect the first time?
Oh, absolutely. You know, we have so many quilt in traditional quilting and in many things. We want to be perfect. And we expect ourselves to be perfect the first time we try anything, or otherwise we think we're no good at it. What I do in my classes, the very first thing is there are two rules. The first one is there are no masterpieces allowed, and the second one is you may not say, I can't, or I'm not good at. You can say, I still need time to practice this, I need time to learn. But, you know, we call it kindergarten. We just throw all expectations out the window, and we come and we play. I do things like I never tell a student this is the way to do this. You know, some students get frustrated. I won't tell them every step of the way what to do. I ask them questions and try to get them to answer their own questions. And the biggest answer to the what happens if you do this is we'll try it and see.
Right.
Let's see
right.
what happens.
Yeah.
You know, so I try to unload the fear of failure.
Right. It's sort of you give in the classroom. I bet it's very comforting to have you there to sort of, you know, reaffirm that it's okay to work like that.
Oh, absolutely. We do a lot of playing. We make a lot of messes. We, you know, it's all about experimenting. And there is so much growth that happens when you try something that you haven't done before. And the classroom can be a really safe environment for that when everybody is freely playing and we all encourage each other. Nobody's saying, oh, my stitches look better than yours, or you know, your points don't match. We don't do that in my class. We just play.
So what are the sort of your current passion that you're working with in your particular quilts?
Right now I am playing a lot with whole cloth pieces. I love to screen print. So I dye my cloth, and I'll do several layers of dye and screen print a bleach product to take out some of the dye and then put back in color with paints and dye. I love creating my own cloth, and then I'll create often a larger image that ties into the screen printing I've done, just painting and stitching. So it's kind of a fun different way. It couldn't have happened when my children were very young, because it takes longer chunks of time in the studio when you're working with paint and dye.
Right, and you have to have it where it's separated to be, leave it out, right, so it can dry and go to the next step.
Yeah, I have a fantastic studio in my home. Although, you know, it's right here on the main floor, always has been. It used to have a baby gate up so the kids couldn't come in. They just stand there and throw their toys at me when I'm trying to do stuff. They're free to come in now. They're old enough to kind of not wreck things up too much. But, you know, I'm right here in the middle of all the goings on with the family while I'm creating.
That's awesome. That's really nice because you don't feel isolated then. You're creating with people. You have written some books. Your work has been featured in a lot of books. What is your most recent book that's out?
I only have one book. It's Art Plus Quilt, and it's a basic design manual. It explains the basic alphabet of the visual language, the basic elements of line, texture, shape, color, and value, and then describes how they are put together to create meaning in the visual language, and talks a little bit about critique. But it's meant to encourage everybody, any basic beginner, to really look at the world around them through the eyes of an artist. Even somebody making a nine patch can apply the elements of art to make that nine patch really sparkle and glow and become more of their own personal creative vision. I really honestly believe that every single person can learn to be an artist. It can be taught. You know, for some reason, our culture thinks that if you don't draw perfectly the first time you pick up a pencil, that you're not an artist. But there's so many technical things about drawing, and the elements of art are easy to learn, you know, so it's just that we, for some reason, don't teach these basics. And our culture believes that, you know, you can only be an artist if you're naturally gifted with that, which I just think is completely false.
So people just need to practice, you know, is that sort of where you would suggest if they feel like, oh, I want to be able to draw flowers or houses and I really not, you know, don't know how to do that?
Of course. I mean, anything that anybody does really well, they do really well because they have spent the time learning. Mm-hmm. They didn't start out perfecting with a perfect technique, you know, whether it's appliqué or drawing flowers. You know, I have minimal art background, and it's mostly technical because I studied architecture for a while in college, and I've always wanted to learn how to draw figures, draw people. Mm-hmm. People are really hard. So I finally decided to, you know, practice what I preach. And a couple of years ago, I said, okay, that's it. I'm going to learn how to draw faces and make them not look like aliens. I want them to look like people. And so every single day, I'd take a little index card and spend 1 to 10 minutes drawing a face on that index card and put it in a box. And at the end of the year, with a huge stack of index cards, my faces don't look like aliens anymore. It's putting in the time to do the work. You know, they still don't look like the actual people I'm drawing. They look human. You know,
they
have
look
a ways
human.
To go.
You know, I think that is really so key, is that you have to do it over and over and over, because people will practice it once and then it'll be like 6 months till they do it again. And it's like starting over.
Right, right. You have to put in the time. It's, you know, just like anything. You look at the major award-winning quilts, somebody who has perfect hand stitching or perfect hand quilting, and they have that perfect hand quilting because they've put in their 5,000 hours. Mm-hmm. You know, they didn't start out with teeny tiny hand quilting stitches. They learned how to do it. You know, it takes practice.
Yeah, and you work in series. We have just a minute here, but you work in series, and that probably helps in the same way.
It gives you the opportunity to explore a technique or an idea in depth. You know, it's like repeating the same thing over and over, but improving it each time. You know, if you think about what you have just done, whether it turned out the way you wanted it to or not, instead of calling it a failure, say, that was interesting. This is what I did. This is what went wrong. This is what I can do differently next time. And then do that differently next time. Improve and expand on what the experience is, and then it's not a failure.
Well, Lyric, this has been really, really fun. I just love hearing your thoughts. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
So people can go and visit your website, lyrickinard.com, where you have your teaching schedule and tutorials and a great blog.
Thank you very much.
This is American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. Hold on, and we'll be right back after the break.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration.
you're back at the Fall 2012 Moda Fabrics Fashion Show. It's a great show, folks. Don't forget to mind your P's and Q's with Applejack, an alphabet-themed collection by Tim and Beck. Next, we're taking a journey to a whimsical land filled with cute critters, flowers, and sweet confections with Cherry on Top by Keiki. Hallelujah! The muted reds, navies, and creams of Old Glory Gatherings by Primitive Gatherings brings a nostalgic feel to the runway. And now, something for the men in your life. Trails End combines the beauty of fall leaves and wildlife. Stay tuned for more runway reporting and visit your local quilt shop to see these fashionable lines and more from Moda Fabrics.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ Magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. Now I have Adita Sitar, the designer behind laundry basket quilts that you all know and love from her fabulous books and patterns and fabric line. She's been on the show before to tell us about her work, and I thought, you know, it'd be really fun to have her come back on and talk a little bit more about what's new. She's done a lot of new things since the last time, and share her designing, and I think she has a new book out. So welcome to the show, Adita.
Hello. It's so nice to be with you, Pat. Thank you for having me again.
You know, April's really busy, isn't it? You must be just like, You got fabric piles everywhere, I bet.
It's like a pouring rain of fabric here, and I'm jumping from one puddle to another puddle.
Yeah, this is the time of year that we get all the fabric to take and make things for the trade show in May. So April is hopping at most of our homes.
Yes, yeah. Yep, and I have to tell you, my fabric is not here yet. So I'm just have loose swatches and getting ready ideas and getting ready for the catalog and hoping that they're going to be here soon and I can start up on my quilts.
So you're stalking the UPS man at this point, waiting for the boxes.
Yes. Yes. I'm standing like a kid waiting for Christmas presents.
Yes. Now, let's talk a little bit about your fabric lines, because like mine, you have both cottons and batiks. Did you start out that way with both types of fabric?
No, I started up actually with just batiks with Moda, and I had designed a few of those collections, and I would design those and use them with other Moda collection. And at one of the markets a few years ago, I did a quilt called Shooting Star. And in that quilt, I use a Chantala collection and Girl's Best Friend and Pathway Batiks from my collection. And it just looked beautiful together. This quilt still seemed to be quilter's favorite. And at that time, I was asked if I would like to have my own fabrics, printed fabrics that will go great with my batiks, and I was just thrilled with that. So
that's really neat. I didn't know that you started with just batiks, and you've never been afraid to mix them. You've always done that.
I always done it. So that was a kind of a look to my scrappy quilts, and right from the beginning, I always used everything that I had. So prints, batiks, touch of muslin, wherever I had it, I put it into my quilts. And having that kind of look I presented. Mm-hmm. But officially, I started designing a few years ago, and I was lucky to have the prints and batiks match perfectly, almost look like the batiks were watercolor version of my prints, like the melted into a batik.
Yeah, they're just gorgeous. Her fabrics are so beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
What is the line that's currently available for people to buy right now, your most current in the store?
The line that it's coming to stores right now is the Paint Box collection. Okay. And it's just a wonderful selection of beautiful batiks and prints that goes together great. And the one that it's available in stores also is the Dancing in the Rain collection. But I hear that it's selling out, so it's a good one to have.
Yep.
And Paint Box is just coming in.
Okay, very good. So when you're designing your lines for Moda, do you use mood boards? Do you use photographs? What's sort of your process to get going?
I always try to come up with a fun idea for a theme. And like in a Paint Box collection, I consider quilters are quite a bit of artists. And we create our artwork with fabrics. So I kind of come up with this concept of Paint Box collection, what it's fabrics that a quilter will paint the quilts with it. And I love doing that and kind of pull that idea together and always come up with theme. It's easier for me then to name the colors, to come up with designs, to put it on the fabrics.
Right.
My Dancing in the Rain collection, it was all about raining and jumping from puddle to puddle. And quilters do that. I'm doing it right now in my studio. Just, you know this. We like to select fabrics for one quilt, then we move to the next quilt, and we have those piles of fabrics that no one is allowed to touch or use it because they're ready for something.
That's right. Don't dare take a piece out of that pile because you'll never find it again. You'll end up putting it in something else.
No, and it's picking up a team allows me to, you know, draw little umbrellas or putting a little bit of colors that really reminiscent the team and bring kind of a mood to the collection.
Yeah, I really like that idea. I think a theme works for a lot of people. You know, it lets them, puts them in the mood when they look at your fabric line. So, you know, it's all sort of a great package. Do you still buy fabric? I'm always curious of other people, you know,
I buy fabrics all the time. I love fabrics. And a lot of my quilts, especially for my books, are scrappy quilts. So I use my own fabrics, but then also all of the other fabrics that I love collecting and have favorites. And speaking of buying fabrics, I have a bolt of your fabric in my studio right now.
Oh.
How do you like that, bananas? Or should
I
say vegetables?
Oh, I like it a lot. You're so funny. Yes, well, very good. Yes, I know I have some of yours because I made a whole quilt that was mostly yours for one of my books. So that was...
Thank you.
It was gorgeous, gorgeous. So tell me about your latest book. Is it out or it's coming out?
My newest book will come out in May, and it is spectacular. I'm so excited about it.
Yay.
It is every book that I put out, I focus on a technique that I like using in my quilts, and I want to share that technique with quilters. And in this book, I'm talking about raw edge applique, using fusible webbing, using pre-cut pieces, or you can cut them yourself. And it's a wonderful book called Seasonal Silhouettes. So you have a collection of 12 gorgeous blocks, and each block reflects the seasons, January, February, spring, not only the month, but also what happened in the nature. And I included...
Applique.
Yes, it's all applique. There is 5 different ways to use the 12 blocks. So in the back of the book, you have different layouts for table runners, for a singular wall hanging, maybe bed runner, wall, and an album quilt. So you have a variety of layouts. Also, you have a detailed direction on how I do my raw edge applique, how I do my quilting, and how I do my binding. So it's kind of A to Z for somebody that want to learn raw edge applique.
Wow, it sounds like it's taken a class with you all put in a book.
Yes, pretty much. Or if you're doing a block of the month, this would be a wonderful for a block of the month, because many shops can use that as a learning tool to start it up, teach others, or quilters could use that, learn how to do the roach applique.
Right. And then follow along.
Yeah. Enjoy every month different projects, and we will have laser cut silhouettes for those.
Yeah, tell me about the, you're doing, for a lot of your quilts now, you started this fairly recently, that people can buy everything already laser cut with full fusible on the back. Are there any tips for using your shapes that you could give me?
What I love to do is use a layout, and our new book provides full layouts. The fusible shape have a little bit of a sticky on it, what it's wonderful to place your background over layout and now gently place the shapes, and you don't have to fuse them because they stick gently to the background. You can look at it, the whole picture. If you're pleased with it, then you use the iron to fuse it in place temporarily and then stitch around the edges with your favorite stitch. Depends what technique you decide to use. Mm-hmm. So I love using the silhouettes. They're such a nice tool to add a little bit whimsical look to your quilt and decorate just a little bit more. You don't have to do every block. You can do just corners in a border, or maybe the center of your quilt could add that little applique detail. And it's for anyone that want to do a nice, quick project.
Right. Since it's all cut out for you, it's really nice for people who maybe have problems with their hands. They can't cut anymore or, you know, can't cut that much. Do you need to use a certain type needle since you're doing full fusible?
Yes, I like to use, you can use either embroidery needle or Macrotex needle. So also quilting needle could work good over the fusible webbing, because we always have to remember that the fusible webbing like to stick to your needle just a little bit. But if you use the right needle, and I have had such a good luck lately with the Macrotex needles, really the results are just wonderful. Wonderful.
Oh, that's good.
And
to
also
know.
Yeah, Aurofil threads. Mm-hmm. Because I'm using the weight 50, what it's a lighter weight of a thread, you really stitch nicely over the applique. It's beautiful.
Yay! I can't wait. I can't wait to see it. So, okay, just we only have a minute, and I'm just really curious because when you go and travel all around, which people can go to your website, right, laundrybasketquilts.com to find your travel schedule. You work with your husband. Does he travel with you a lot so they'll get to meet him too?
Yes, he travels with me all the time because it's hard for me to carry my suitcases, and I bring lots of quilts for all the quilters when I come and visit. So Michael is kind enough to come with me on the trips and help me carry all my quilts and have fun with the quilting ladies.
Yeah, yeah. My husband travels with me too, so everybody gets to meet the business half, right? The guys who do the accounting. That's
yes, exactly. Wonderful too. We get to spend time together, and that's our goal in life, to be together. So we make the best out of everything that we do.
That's wonderful.
And sometimes when I'm not excited about him being with me, I just pretend I don't speak English.
You guys are so funny. Well, Adita, this has been wonderful. Thanks you for being on the show.
Oh, you are so welcome. Thank you for having me. Thank you for always saying hi to me at the market. I so look forward to share with you my new book.
Well, I'll see you there. Visit Adita at laundrybasketquilts.com. This is Pat Sloan for American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. We will be back next week with an all-new show. It is a really special show, the next one, so you don't want to miss it. Visit us at allpeoplequilt.com.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks for listening to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio.